professional, expert, and partisan look back at the 89th Congress and a look ahead at the 90th Congress, the subject of this week on Capitol Cloakroom.
From the nation's capital, CBS Radio brings you Capitol Cloakroom. This week's guests are William B. Prendergast, Republican Sergeant-at-Arms in the House of Representatives, and William G. Phillips, former staff director of the Democratic Study Group of the House of Representatives and presently consultant to it. Now here is CBS News correspondent Roger Mudd.
To discuss our subject today are two longtime students and practitioners of the political arts and sciences. They are first William B. Prendergast, the Republican Sergeant-at-Arms of the House, who is really the GOP's idea man on the House side. Until 1964, Mr. Prendergast had been research director at the Republican National Committee. He even ran for Congress in 1956. And Mr. William G. Phillips, presently the consultant to the Democratic Study Group and Alliance of Democratic Liberals in the House, formerly the staff director of the study group and formerly congressional liaison on the Hill for Sergeant Shriver's War on Poverty. Let's begin with the same question for both of you gentlemen. What was the best and what was the worst of the 89th Congress? Let's go with Mr. Phillips, the Democrat.
I think history will record the record of the 89th Congress be one of the most significant output of progressive legislation that benefits the people of America in all history. In 1964, voters of America gave a mandate to President Johnson and his Democratic Congress of almost 2-to-1 majority to enact a legislative program that would meet the needs of our nation in the mid-1960s. In terms of quantity and quality both, I think the record, which we'll get into, I suspect, in some detail, can be measured. Some people have called it an education Congress. Some people have called it a conservation Congress. But however we measure it, I think its achievements will long be recorded in our history.
You notice Mr. Phillips did not mention the worst, so we'll turn to Mr. Prendergast and see if he wants to talk about that.
Well, I would have to think a little while before I could say what was the best thing that the 89th Congress did. If we were to single out one piece of legislation as most significant for its social implications, I think it would be the Medicare bill, which was passed in the first session of the 89th Congress, a bill which was an amalgam, of course, of the administration's suggestions and the proposals of Republican Congressman John Burns of Wisconsin. As for the worst, I think that the most unsettling aspect of the work of the 89th Congress was its abdication of its responsibility to serve as a deliberative body, carefully to consider legislative proposals, to investigate fully what it was doing before it took action, to engage in reasoned debate on legislation that it passed. It has been often called a rubber stamp Congress, and its record, I think, justifies that appellation. Now, the majority leader of the United States Senate, Senator Mike Mansfield, is now calling for the 90th Congress to resurvey the work of the 89th Congress, a stance that I think fortifies the conclusion that I offered, that I reached about the work of the 89th Congress. It did its work in too much of a hurry. It was not a deliberative body. It knuckled down too often to the demands of the White House.
Well, we've got our issue is joined, isn't it, Mr. Phillips? You want to pick in and go after him now?
Perhaps Mr. Prendergast and I were sitting in on two different Congresses. I don't think so, but of course he overlooks the fact that most of the legislation that was enacted in the 89th Congress had been considered, some of it, for 10 or 15 years before it had ever got to the floor with a Democratic majority that could pass it. Now, perhaps that's too quick for Mr. Prendergast's party. I think there's some logic in that assumption. But a bill like Medicare, for example, was first introduced in the form in which it basically passed in 1957. It took 8 years for that bill. I don't think this is hasty. The education program is another example. some of the amendments to the Housing Act had been discussed for many years. So that we're talking about legislation that had been thoroughly considered for not just the 89th Congress, but some of the bills back through the 85th Congress. Now, of course, we can measure the debate. I know in my library, the hearings and the debate on these bills take up three file cabinets and several yards of shelf space. So I don't think this is hasty action on the part of the Congress.
Well, these are all quantitative measurements that Mr. Phillips is giving us. The number of years that were spent in discussion of legislative proposals that were enacted into law in 1965 and 66, the amount of words that were spilled over these legislative proposals in committee and on the floor of the Congress. I think we ought not to look just at the quantity, but at the quality of the consideration and of the discussion. Not all measures that were passed by the 89th Congress were given the kind of consideration that Mr. Phillips implies was given, let's say, to Medicare. For example, the beautification bill was not was acted on in great haste. The action on the Elementary and Secondary School Act was so precipitous as to draw a protest from leading Democratic members of the House of Representatives, such as Congresswoman Edith Green of Oregon. And I could, I think, go down through a catalog of legislation that was passed by the 89th Congress in response to White House pressures without fulfillment by the Congress of its responsibility to serve as a co-equal branch of the federal government.
Well, now, in the 89th Congress, you both agree that you did have this enormous output of legislation.
We're talking about 650 public laws,
right.
So it's easy to pick out one or two examples that perhaps because of the urgency of the need, which had many of which had been postponed for years and years thanks to obstructionist tactics on the part of the Republican Party, that certainly we can find a couple of examples out of 650 public laws.
Well, as I understand Mr. Phillips' point, he says a lot of this was just reaching fruition in the 89th Congress. Is your point, Mr. Phillips, that it would have continued to remain unpassed had the Republicans been in control and that the Democrats should take credit for it, that it was not a matter of historical inevitability?
I think the record speaks for itself. We can analyze any of the key roll calls on these bills and find out that anywhere from 85 to 99% of the Republicans voted against these measures on either recommittal or final passage. There are a couple of exceptions to that where it got down to around 60%.
Well, you'd have to be much more specific about the votes you're talking about before I would accept this, but let's go back to the statement that Republican obstructionism for many years prevented the enactment of allegedly meritorious legislation passed in 1965 and 1966. When were the Republicans last in control of the Congress of the United States? When were they in a position to obstruct anything that the Democratic majority in House and Senate wanted to pass? There's not been a Republican majority in the Congress since 1953-54. Whatever has been passed since, or blocked since that time, has been blocked with a Democratic majority and a pretty solid one in most of these years in both the House and the Senate. So if the legislation should have been passed sooner, the blame can hardly be laid at the doorstep of the party that has been a minority in the Congress from 1954 down to the present.
Well, we've talked about the 89th, and we're about ready to embark on the 90th. It's been said since the election, Mr. Prendergast, that this session, the Republican Party can pick up all the marbles because Democrats don't want to do much shooting of marbles because they're afraid if they start laying out new programs that the programs will backfire on them in 1968 in the presidential election. As a general proposition, would you both discuss that now? Who's going to have the initiative in the 90th Congress?
Well, the initiative, of course, is going to rest with the party that has the White House and has a still possesses a very solid majority in the House and the Senate, the Democratic Party. There are enough Democratic votes in both houses to pass anything on which Democrats are fairly united. The ratio in the Senate has not been significantly changed, the party ratio, by the election of 1966. And even in the House of Representatives, there are 60-odd more Democrats than Republicans in this body in the 90th Congress. So the initiative certainly will rest with the president and with his party in the Congress. Republicans will be in a position to play a more positive role than they have been able to play in the 89th Congress because they have greater numbers, particularly in the House of Representatives, and they will exert more influence on the final shape of legislation. And it may be that in the 90th Congress, unlike the 89th, some meritorious Republican proposals will get a hearing in committee and get consideration on the floor and even get, in some instances, favorable action.
Mr. Phillips, what about that? Do you think the Democratic Party will use the 90th Congress for more Great Society proposals, or will, as Mr. Mansfield hopes, there be a general slowing down and looking and watching?
Of course, President Johnson will set the tenor of the administration's legislative program in the State of the Union message in a few weeks. But I think in terms of what the 90th Congress means, I think it's a real showdown Congress coming as it does on the eve of the 1968 elections. This will be an opportunity for the Republican Party and the Republican leadership in the House to in effect put up or shut up. For many years they've been issuing position papers and describing what they say are constructive alternative proposals to administration bills. Now, of course, my colleague knows that many of these bills did get not only a hearing, but a vote on the floor of the House, because on a motion to recommit, any of these substitutes can be offered by his side of the aisle. I would hope that the Republican leadership would make good on its threat or promise to come up with some of these proposals in the 90th Congress.
Well, I've got a list here. If we can just tick off a few of them and see just where you gentlemen agree and differ. Let's go, for instance, with civil rights. What do you expect, Mr. Phillips? Do you expect anything from the White House on civil rights in the 90th Congress?
I doubt that there will be any startling new proposals. Of course, the administration proposal in the 89th Congress was stalled in the Senate by a filibuster led by Senator Dirksen of Illinois after it had passed the House with bipartisan support. Whether or not the President decides to send up a measure similar to that again, we'll just have to wait and see.
Does the GOP think there's a need for civil rights legislation?
I think the Republicans feel that there is something to be done in the field of civil rights legislation. I think particularly there is need for study of existing laws and the improvement of existing legislation in many ways. Now, I would not be hopeful that a civil rights measure of the type that passed the House in 1966 and failed to pass the Senate because of opposition by both members of both parties would be successful in the Congress this year. If it wasn't passed last year, I don't think that its prospects in 1967 or 68 are very bright.
Well, let's talk about the war on poverty. You can chew some red meat on that one, Mr. Phillips. You're going to obviously face a good fight on the appropriations, fight on poverty, on education, and also appropriations on Vietnam. What's in prospect for poverty?
The appropriations fights, I think, will be some of the most interesting of all, because I think we're going to see major efforts to cut back on many of the vitally important Great Society programs that were enacted in the 89th Congress. And this will be one of the real testing grounds so that the American public can see just who is for education, air pollution control, water pollution control, Model Cities program, rent supplements, the war on poverty, and many other programs. The war on poverty certainly is one of the most controversial of the issues that will come up in the 90th Congress. It was perhaps the most controversial in the last Congress. The Republican Opportunity Crusade bill, I would assume, will be again offered as an alternative to the administration's proposal. Of course, what it seeks to do is to decentralize authority for carrying on the war on poverty, whereas originally in 1964, the Economic Opportunity Act sought to coordinate the various programs that are carried on at all levels of government in one single agency. I think this is the only way it can be successful.
Well, will the Democrats, do you think, deliberately hold back appropriations to avoid criticism in 68? Will there be some cutting back on your part, on your party's part?
Well, here again, the budgetary needs of the war in Vietnam must be balanced against our domestic needs, and this is a very difficult decision. Responsibility, of course, rests with the president, and he's had to wrestle with this now for the last 2 years, and whatever those needs are, I'm sure the Democratic administration will do its best to take care of both domestic requirements and our international commitments.
Mr. Prendergast?
Well, this, of course, is going to be the philosophy of Republicans, too, that the war in Vietnam must be adequately financed. They have been critical of the administration in the past for failing to reveal the full extent of the financial burden entailed in this war. And the predictions that many Republicans made last year about the supplemental appropriation that would be necessary at the opening of the 90th Congress are now going to be borne out when President Johnson, as we know from press reports, will ask the Congress for authority to spend some $10 billion or something in that neighborhood to finance the war in Vietnam for the rest of this fiscal year. Republicans have been critical of the failure of the administration to reveal the full magnitude of war costs. They suspect that part of this magnitude was concealed in order to make easier the passage of certain domestic programs of the administration, which, in the minds of many members of Congress, do not enjoy the same priority as does financing the war. But the war should not be an excuse for coming to a halt in progress in dealing with urgent domestic programs. I'm sure this is the stand that Republicans will take, and they will press again this year, as they did last year, for the administration to set some scheme of priorities to determine where the funds that the federal government has to spend should be spent. One of the great failings of the administration last year was its inability or unwillingness to make up its mind about what came first and what came second in order of urgency, and to construct a budget on the basis of such criteria.
Well, is that a fair criticism, Mr. Phillips? Has the administration failed to set a priority for its domestic needs? You said a minute ago that it requires a balance between one and the other.
Of course, that's exactly what the budget is, and there's no equivocation. In fact, the president stated in his budget message last January the very difficult weighing of domestic considerations, domestic needs, and our foreign commitments, and he made some very difficult decisions. Many of them were politically unpopular. For example, he recommended cuts in the school lunch and school milk programs, which Congress overrode and restored that those funds. So this is a very difficult thing when we're talking about X billion dollars and tremendous competing demands for those dollars, both at home and abroad.
Well, the criticism is made that he is doing that deliberately to blame, so Congress takes the blame for being spenders. Is that
we have many cynics in politics.
Mr. Prendergast, you want to say something?
Well, the point here is that the costs of our military operations in Vietnam were not fully stated in 1966 to the Congress or the American people. And the president, in fact, evaded difficult decisions that would have had to been to have been made by way of elimination, cutback, or deferring of some domestic programs if he had frankly stated the expenditure that would be involved as a result of the war in Vietnam. This is what he failed to do in 1965.
I don't think anyone can predict precisely, even with all the military intelligence information, as to what is going to happen even next week in terms of a military campaign, where much of the initiative is in the hands of the enemy.
But the point, Mr. Phillips, is that many people did make this prediction, and among them Republican congressmen like Mr. Laird of Wisconsin, Mr. Mahon, a Democratic chairman of the House Appropriations Committee, made a prediction last year about defense expenditure.
It's easy to make a prediction when you don't have the responsibility.
It is far closer to the actual figure that we'll have at the end of this fiscal year than was the president's prediction.
What about draft reform? Does that promise to heat the fires of partisanship, Mr. Phillips? Apparently it's coming up.
I think, of course, the draft law is up for review and revision or extension. I think Congress, the appropriate committees, will take a very hard look at it. There's been a great deal of controversy over the operation of the Draft Act, and I think a thorough study is long overdue.
This is not the kind of issue, however, in which you're likely to have a split on party
lines.
No,
I don't think so.
In my estimation.
Well, what about the proposal that it seems to me came from the Republicans originally for a 10% increase in Social Security benefits? Chairman Mills now says he wants a long, long study of that. Is that going to be an issue that'll face us in the 90th Congress?
Republican stand on this issue, I think, was incorporated in legislation that some 80 Republican members of the House introduced last year, providing for an increase in Social Security benefits of the order of 8% to catch up with rising living costs of recent years and an automatic escalation of Social Security benefits as the cost of living goes up in future years.
Well, is that dead for this Congress, do you think?
I think the committee, of course, will be acting on Social Security amendments in the 90th Congress, and this is one of many proposals that will be studied. Democrats in the past have always taken the lead in improving the Social Security Act, and I think that will again be the case in the coming year.
Well, now, and just in the minute we've got left, a quick answer from each one of you. Do you look at the 90th Congress to be a fairly routine Congress without the great excitement of past Congresses that we've known in the preceding decade? Mr. Phillips?
I don't think there is ever such a thing as a routine Congress, because they're always filled with surprises, filled with action, with tension, and particularly coming as it does on the eve of a very important presidential election, I don't expect it to be routine at all.
Mr. Prendergast.
It certainly won't be routine. The nature of the issues that the Congress must face is such that it will be an exciting Congress. I trust that it will not completely follow the advice of Senator Mansfield and simply stand still and survey its work in the past and do no more. This is part of the essential job for the 90th Congress, but it must continue to make progress because our problems will not wait for two more years.
Thank you, Mr. Prendergast and Mr. Phillips, for being with us on Capitol Cloakroom.
This week's guests were William B. Prendergast, Republican Sergeant-at-Arms in the House of Representatives, and William G. Phillips, former Staff Director of the Democratic Study Group of the House of Representatives and presently consultant to it. CBS News correspondent Roger Mudd was the moderator. Capitol Cloakroom originates in Washington, D.C. Capitol Cloakroom is a recorded production of CBS News.
This program has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.